there is a lot of pain that many of us deal with during the season. And sometimes seeing another person giving themselves permission to be a little bit quieter, a little bit more peaceful, and do a little bit less will give them permission to, and maybe even give them permission to talk to you a little bit more.
Hello and welcome. My name is Rachel, and you're listening to episode 191 of Candid Catholic Convos, a show about Catholicism that enriches your faith, answers your questions, and meets you wherever you're at on your faith journey. I can't believe it's here already, but as we step into the first week of Advent, the Church invites us to slow down, breathe, and listen to the quiet whisper of God's promise. So to do that, let's start with Scripture. This week's Scripture comes from Isaiah chapter 64, verse 1, one of the great voices of hope in the Old Testament. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down. Isaiah isn't just expressing frustration here. He's expressing longing. A longing for God to enter into the brokenness, the confusion, and the disappointments of the world. And that longing is not so far from our own. Advent is the season where the Church names what we often try to ignore. We need God. We're waiting for him, and we cannot save ourselves. Hope in the Christian sense is not blind optimism or wishful thinking. Hope is watchfulness. Hope is trust that God is already at work, even when we don't see it yet. Hope is living as though the promises of Christ are true, because they are. See, the message of Advent is this: God does come. He enters into our mess. He keeps his promises. Advent is not simply a countdown to Christmas. It's an invitation to encounter hope himself. For our saint spotlight this week, I want to introduce you to a saint who's always shown up for me when life feels like it's falling apart. Saint Jude Thaddeus, the patron saint of impossible causes, and really, the patron of hope when hope feels impossible. St. Jude was one of the 12 apostles, but he didn't have the fame of Peter or the poetic style of John. In fact, for centuries, he was kind of, well, avoided. People confused him with Judas Iscariot, you know, the one who betrayed Jesus, so they didn't pray to him. And because of that, St. Jude became this quiet, almost hidden figure, someone overlooked, misunderstood, pushed to the margins. But here's the beautiful twist. God loves working through the ones we overlook. Over time, Christians discovered that St. Jude had this special way of showing up in situations that felt completely hopeless. Broken relationships, financial crises, illness, addictions, grief that feels too heavy to carry. And when people started turning to him, miracles began to be reported everywhere. Almost like St. Jude was saying, "Hey, hi, I'm here. Bring me the tough stuff." What I love about St. Jude is that he reminds us that no situation is too far gone for God. That even when we feel forgotten, heaven has not forgotten us. St. Jude's mission is to stand beside us in the dark until the light breaks through. And that makes him the perfect companion for Advent, this season of longing and waiting. See, Advent isn't about pretending everything is fine. It's about hoping in the God who enters our brokenness. St. Jude teaches us that hope isn't naive. It's courageous. It's trusting that God is still working, even when we can't see it. Advent and the holidays are a joyous season for the Church, but for many, it can be a reminder of grief or loss, of that brokenness and messiness we try to avoid. If you've ever found yourself buried under sadness instead of wrapping paper during this time of year, today's episode is for you. I'm excited to welcome back Dr. Kirsten Tollefson, psychiatrist and program director for the Catholic Charities Libre Mental Health Clinic, to talk about some tangible ways we can lean into hope this season, even when it feels out of reach. Kirsten, welcome back to Candid Catholic Convos. I'm really excited to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you. It's always lovely.
We cannot believe that the first week of Advent is finally upon us.
Yeah. It was the 4th of July last week, right?
Yes. I mean, it was just sunny and warm and we were at the beach and everything was great. And now it's cold and dark and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
1 hour of sunlight a day, I'm pretty sure.
I want to talk about the season of Advent. So last year, this was something that was new to me last year, but each season of Advent has a theme. And typically the first week of Advent is the theme is hope. And I want to dive into that because especially at this time of year, hope can feel like a really precious commodity. And that is not always abundantly available, especially for some of us. And I'm going to use myself as an example because we were talking before the program and I've mentioned it on here before a lot of times that I have a history with anxiety and depression. But more specifically for this episode, I also have a pretty lengthy history of loss. And it felt like every 2 years around any holiday, I think the only holidays that I haven't experienced loss at are probably like Memorial Day and Flag Day. Maybe 4th of July, if I'm not thinking about it. But pretty much around every holiday, there is someone in my life or something in my life that has happened that has caused me to feel hopeless. And between, you know, the loss of grandparents, I've lost more friends than I can count. We lost a baby. I've lost my dog, my cat. And it becomes to be a lot. And I've noticed that personally, once we start getting into the fall season, which used to be my favorite season, everything just feels heavy. And I know for a lot of people, the holidays can feel extra heavy because we're focusing on the loss or the grief that comes with not having something, whether that's having a person or having anything else. Tends to be a grief that's associated with the holiday, which is tough because we're told this is the most wonderful time of the year. This is the most joyous time of the year. This is when Jesus comes. Like, we should be happy, but I'm not. So how can we find hope when it feels like there is none?
Such a challenging topic is sort of the possibly understatement of the year. And the hard thing here is that there's no simple answer. And that we all wish there was, because the pain can be so intense when you've had loss. And sometimes, no matter how much you know about the hope in what is to come, you're not going to feel it. For me, there are a couple of thoughts there that when I've struggled with not having hope for a number of reasons. First, we are not obliged to feel it. If you don't feel hope, that is not a sin. Not feeling something doesn't mean that you're abnormal. It doesn't mean that you're sinning. At the same time, we need hope to live. And so the question often for me becomes, well, how do I keep that hope there even though I don't feel it? And I'm not going to lie to myself and say that this thing is going to make me feel it, right? Because it may not. And that depends on the person. As Catholics, one of the things that really can bring that hope is something visual. I like the Advent wreath. Mm. Lighting the candles. Just seeing candles. Candles I find to be really helpful. Now, if this turns into the guilt trip of, I better dig that up, then wait. You know? And then the second thing is, if you don't have an Advent wreath and you want an Advent wreath, remember that 4 white candles with a ribbon or a million very simple derivations of that, that's fine. No Advent wreath is fine. You know, I think that when you're feeling pain, turning, solving the pain into another project can be hard. At the same time, managing going through a painful period is going to take energy, does take some thoughtful consideration as to what will help you stay in the present, connected to the people around you, and moving forward as a son or daughter of God with the acts of hope that still continue even in the absence of hope. So, and then that goes into remembering that that really does take energy. It comes out of the same bucket of energy that walking 8 miles does.
I love what you said about the Advent wreath, because I think I have it in my head sometimes that like the Advent police are going to show up at my door and are like, you're not doing your Advent wreath properly. You didn't do Advent properly. And like, is there a proper way to do Advent? Not necessarily, especially if it's going to cause you more frustration or more angst or anxiety than it's meant to. I mean, Advent is a season of peace and a season of waiting. And if trying to dig out the dusty old Advent wreath from grandma's basement or going out and crafting your own out of branches that you found on your walk in the wild and making it look beautiful, if that's too much, then don't do it. But if it's something that you feel is going to ignite something in you that brings you that joy, that brings you that peace, then do it. But if it's not, don't do it. And I have to remind myself every year that like, I don't need extra projects on my plate at this time of year, because The world makes my life busy enough between 3 kids in school and parties and presents for teachers and this and that and the third. I don't have to bake a million cookies. Right. I don't have to send Christmas cards. I think the last 2 years I didn't send Christmas cards because I was like, I was just over it. I was like, I don't have. And that's what brought me that peace, you know, just having something. Because my therapist jokes with me all the time that like, I should all over myself, because All I do is I should be doing this. I should be doing that. I should be feeling hopeful. And then it turns into this spiral of I feel guilty because I'm not the way I'm quote unquote supposed to be. So talk to me a little bit about if we find ourselves in that cycle, what's a good way to kind of walk our way out of it? Is there anything like tangible that we can do, or in this case not do? Like, do we have to be doing anything at this point?
Yes. Going to Mass.
Mm.
Remember that morally there are things that we are required to do. We manage to, I don't know, I can't even say multiply it, because it's so big that it begins to crowd all the other stuff out. When in doubt, if you feel guilty about not doing something, talk to a priest.
Mm.
Look for discernment when those feelings of guilt are still sticking. But the second thing is, it's useful before coming into the season, although we're in it now.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, but to sit down and look at the list of things that you're previously committed to and look at the past couple of months, right? Okay. Past couple of months, what have you been doing and how's your energy level been? Okay. So you've been taking 3 kids to activities, to school, helping them with their homework, working, doing a number of things, helping. And that list varies from person to person. If you're looking at that list and you're saying, my energy is used up at the end of the week, you need to be very careful about adding things during the Christmas season without taking other things away. Now, there's no magic wand with this, and I don't think that's always practical. But shifting what you're doing to more carefully prioritized things. So you're decorating your house. You may not be able to clean as much. You know, some things may fall behind. When you create your to-do list of what you're going to do, prepare to have a large Sharpie next to it to cross things out as you realize that they're just not that important. And they're not as essential as they seemed. And again, remember the old bucket of energy thing, because you only got so much and you will be attending to grief during this time. If you are attending to grief, you are a presence for others attending to grief, whether it's the same loss or a different loss. There is a lot of pain that many of us deal with during this season, and sometimes seeing another person giving themselves permission to be a little bit quieter, a little bit more peaceful, and do a little bit less will give them permission to, and maybe even give them permission to talk to you a little bit more.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And you just reminded me that I have house projects. My house is almost 200 years old. So there are lots of things that need fixing. And I legit this past weekend was, I always try to decorate my house right after Thanksgiving. So like mm-hmm. Black Friday, I spend decorating my house.
Right.
But this year I'm like, do I decorate or do I fix that hole in the wall? Or which one do I try to do both in one day? And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I just need to pick one.
Right.
If I'm going to decorate, then I'm just going to decorate and I'm not going to worry about that hole in the wall.
Right.
If I'm going to fix the hole in the wall, then I'm just going to fix the hole in the wall. And I have to teach myself to be okay with that, because sometimes right. it's like, no, I want to do it all. That's the fixer in me. I just want to fix it all. But I love that giving yourself that permission to be that person for somebody else. When I was experiencing the miscarriage that I had, I was so bitter, especially with God. And I remember saying this at confession. I was so bitter that why would he do this to me? Like, I didn't understand. All I wanted to be was a mother, and I couldn't understand why he couldn't just let me have that. And then it wasn't until years later, not even years, it was probably like a year or two later, when it finally hit me, because I had three separate friends of mine come to me with their own experience of having a miscarriage. And because I had been through it and I had been public with them and with, you know, on social media about this loss that I was experiencing and how I was grieving it, they felt comfortable coming to me to be like, I'm also going through this. What do I do? How did you make it out? Mm-hmm. And had I not been through what I had been through, I would not be able to be there for them in their moment of need. So a lot of times now when I'm like stuck, because I call them my heavy days, when just everything just feels heavy and I like can barely, if I get up to brush my teeth, I consider it a win. I look at my kids and I'm like, well, if I can't get up for me, I'm going to get up for them, because they still need to eat breakfast and get dressed and do homework. And that's going to be my priority. And if I can do it for them, then that's a win for the day. And like you said, mm-hmm. like we got to check off our little wins. Another thing my therapist tells me is to aim small, miss small. So if you aim to just do the next right thing and you do it, that's a win. And just start racking up those little wins until you have that energy. And you're absolutely right that we can't pour from an empty cup, but we're so used to draining it. And a lot of times we're like, well, how do I fill it back up? Well, we go to Mass. We get the sacraments. Like, that is honestly, the easiest way to get that spiritual fulfillment back, so that you have the energy. That's why they say at the end of Mass, like, go forth. The Mass is ended. Like, you're here you go. Yeah. Now you can carry on throughout your week and, like, have this energy now. If you do one thing this Advent, go to Mass, go to the sacraments, and there's your win.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that you describe your wins. I think that it's so easy to look back at your day. Okay. So technically I did these things, but they don't count because I had to do them.
Yes.
Or because everybody does them. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, why are you whining about doing them when everybody does them? It is so important to respect what you are doing and also to see the value in it, right? If it's sometimes smiling when you are really struggling in an appropriate setting, right? Because there are times when smiling when you're really struggling is doing yourself and others a disservice. Mm-hmm. But sometimes giving love in those moments of pain is the biggest gift you can give, and a Herculean task. So I love that you use that example.
It's a daily reminder that I have to tell myself is that it's I didn't do nothing. Like right. We're so used to doing the same things every day that it feels like nothing, but we drove half an hour to work or an hour, however long the commute is, like, and we didn't get in an accident, or we picked the kids up from school and like nobody's fighting, and like those are things that we can look back on and say, hey, I did that. But I don't want to diminish the fact that I do this on with the support of medication and with the support mm-hmm. of talking to somebody. And I did that. I'll be honest. I did it kicking and screaming because I did not want to go on medication. I did not want to admit that I needed help. But honest to goodness, I've been doing therapy on and off for 10 years. I've been on and off medication. I'm on it when I need it. I'm off when I don't need it necessarily. But I want to remind anybody listening that there is nothing wrong in saying I need help. I can't do this on my own. Yes, going to mass is great and saying my prayers is great. But in certain situations, especially if the grief is really heavy, it's an assistance that God gives us to help get through those tough times. So like we had talked about earlier, if you break your arm, you would go get help, right? So if this period of grief or this period of loss or whatever it is you're going through feels like too much, go get help. If you don't feel comfortable going to a therapist, go talk to your priest, go talk to a support network.
One thing that I really want to say, if someone offers to help, the answer is yes, unless there's... Now, granted, I know that there are situations in which accepting that help is inappropriate and not a good thing. It's very hard to accept help.
Yes.
It's very hard to respond honestly when someone asks you how you are doing. Now, granted, some people are really not asking, but we all know those moments where someone's asking and we can tell by eye contact, posture, body language that the person really does want to know. In those moments, consider at least putting a little bit out there. Mm. This is a time where it's easy for us to assume that everyone else is too busy for us, which is part of what can become, what can make this holiday so isolating, that not only are people struggling with certain things, right? People may be alone because of losses or for many reasons. It's also easy to say, well, this is a time when I shouldn't reach out because everybody else is so busy. And if they offer, well, they have enough on their plate. Mm-hmm. And remember what it's like to give. Because sometimes what you are doing when you say yes is allowing someone the joy of giving. The other thing about needing help, there's a progression, right? We all have periods of sadness. There is a point where sadness, anxiety, a number of other emotions take on an intensity that affects us in a different way. I don't want to go too much into that because I don't want to do a disservice and be too quick in my description of the difference between clinical depression and sadness and those sorts of things. But the important thing to note is that there is a point at which it does become different from regular sadness. And I'm not only speaking about sadness. We'll use that as the example, though. And where it actually interferes with your ability to be who you are called to be, right? And it can interfere with your ability to work through the grief. This is where having someone you trust to talk about it with is important. This is where, when you are in doubt, maybe talking to your doctor, talking to a professional is important, just to start exploring where you might be emotionally, what type of help may be out there, and exploring possibly accepting that help.
I like that because we mentioned about, you know, if somebody offers help, now is the season to take it. It's so it's okay to accept help from a professional, because my theory is prayer and the sacraments can work in conjunction with this medication to make us, to bring us back to who we were called to be. And the season of hope can be actually a season of hope. You know, we had talked earlier about how sometimes it feels like when somebody would say, oh, you should, this is the season of hope, it's the most joyful time of the year, you should be happy, and I just wanted to kind of like shake them, because I'm like, or like, you need to be praying more, and I just wanted to shake them because like, you don't understand, that's all I'm doing, and I still right, don't feel this right. way. But nothing in this life is permanent, so as long as we can continue moving forward and have that, if we can't have that hope for ourselves, have that hope for someone else, and just keep going, because Christ is coming in this season, and this season of grief or sadness or whatever it is we're going through will pass.
It's very easy for the season of hope to become the season of, why don't you have hope?
Yes.
Which doesn't really help and is inaccurate. I don't want to say we tie feeling it to its presence, because then it's almost like saying, well, you have to live in this dry, barren desert of never feeling it. Mm. I don't mean that. But what I do mean is that you don't have to try harder if you're not feeling it. Make sure that you do something that you can identify as connection every day, even if it's a phone call, writing a letter, or going out of the house and talking to a stranger. Do something that you can identify as connection.
I love that, because we're so isolated anymore. Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, thank you, Kirsten, and I hope you have a wonderful Advent and a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you so much for having me on. I do hope that you have a fantastic Christmas as well and a lovely Advent.
And that's our show. Candid Catholic Convos is brought to you by the Diocese of Harrisburg, hosted and sound engineered by me, Rachel Trochet, and produced by Rachel Bryson. If today's episode resonated with you, please share it on social media. You can tag us using @HBGDiocese. Make sure you also subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to support our production efforts, a donation to our diocesan annual campaign would benefit us greatly in continuing our ministry. Next week, we're exploring how God uses us in our motherhood, like he did Mary and her yes. So like, subscribe, keep praying for us, and we'll keep praying for you.